Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If there's a culture war, the religious right has started it. The religious right has this book that they're trying to make the world follow.
Shutting down government is unbiblical. Because government has a biblical responsibility to care for the poor, they're against poor people.
God told me that we are our brother's keeper. The labor movement is our brother's keeper. So help me God.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, this ought to be interesting.
It goes without saying that you need to find a unique approach to raising any child.
Is that right?
But there are some golden rules that will help you deal with even the most disobedient ones. In their work, Game Theory for Parents, writers and experienced fathers Paul Rayburn and Kevin Zollman explain how you can get your kids to behave better and to do what they're told in all kinds of situations.
And what parent doesn't want that? This is Wretched Radio. Let's see how the latest trend, it really should be latest trends. I have to confess, I think it was a Roseanne commercial. Haven't seen the show. I don't have any interest. I know her agenda. Not interested. Never thought it was funny, but that's just a subjective personal statement, please. This is no reason for a church split because I don't like the Roseanne and you do. So Roseanne was, somebody said there's no parenting books. And somebody responded and went, there's no book for parenting. And somebody responded and said, no, there's like literally thousands of books on parenting. And there are. The question is, who's right? Who's got the system? Well, you just heard this particular video that is on the internet. You can go and watch it yourself based on a book about game theory for kids by Paul Rayburn and Kevin Zollman. Apparently, they're the authority. They are writers and experienced fathers. Therefore, I should listen to them. The question with all of these parenting manuals is, says who? Who says that this is the right way to do it? And of course, we know the answer is God says. And he has told us how to parent our children. I hope that's what my book, my contribution to parenting, was based on. What does the Bible say about how we're supposed to train up our children? And it basically gives two commands. Teach them about the Lord constantly and don't make them angry. And apparently that's enough. Now, that will cover every parenting situation that you will find yourself in. Teach your kids about Jesus. Don't exacerbate them. That's it. So when you go to correct your child, if you're making the... What did I say? Exacerbate?
You said exacerbate. That is to make an issue worse. Which
now, what's the difference?
Exasperate is to frustrate them. And if there's a situation that you know frustrates them, but you continue to do it, then you will exacerbate the situation.
It's exasperationism is the combining of the two words. I was just trying to save some time because please remember, talk show hosts are never wrong. You don't want to annoy your kid is what we're trying to say.
Ever.
So if your encounter with them gets them torqued or gets them sullen, you're doing it wrong. If your correction doesn't include teaching them about Jesus, then you and I are doing it wrong. That's everything we need to know. So let us listen to the, we'll see how many we can endure, the 7 parenting tips from experienced fathers who have written a book called Game Theory for Kids, and we're going to try to compare it to what the Bible says.
Now, every parent has probably faced the situation when their child stopped in the middle of the street, refused to hold their hand, and basically just wouldn't budge. To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. If you need to cross the road, for example, act like you're afraid to do it on your own. Let the child play the role of the parent, and you'll see that they'll immediately get into the game and do what you want them to do.
Oh, we tricked them!
There's another way out.
Okay.
Give your kid a choice. Either they hold your hand or go in the stroller. In most cases, your kid will readily take your hand.
Oh, boy, there's some clever parenting. Give them choices. That is the latest rage. Hey, would you like to cross the street holding my hand or ride in the baby carriage, assuming, of course, you happen to have one with you? Which one would you prefer? Clearly, they don't want to go into the carriage. Then they're going to hold your hand. All you've done is deceived them and ultimately used your authority to get them to submit. Is that what we're supposed to be doing with our kids? By the way, am I having that conversation with them in the middle of the road? They yank their hand out of mine in the middle of the street. Okay, let's just stop for a second, honey. Daddy's kind of afraid to cross the road right now. Could you help me get to the others?
Is there just an option where you grab
which
the
is
child,
the sound that cars
run them
make
to the other
they're...
side, and then explain to them that's not happening again? Isn't there an option like that?
Well, there is an option like that. There most certainly is. Making things, we don't want to impose authority on kids. Now, from a Christian perspective, do we want to be imposing our authority? The answer to that is no. Yes and no. We want our children to submit to us, which means they need to obey to us, but it should be submitting to us as they submit to God. Obeying us as they submit to God. In other words, God needs to be our authority. And so the explanation is, at the appropriate time when you're not getting mowed over by a semi, that you explain, this is why I'm here. I know more than you do about crossing roads. God has given me the authority to make sure that you obey, and he's given me the responsibility to make sure that you're safe. Therefore, you must obey me, and you must do this the way that I am instructing to, or you're sinning against God. Now, that brings God into the picture, that aforementioned commandment to teach them about Jesus wherever you go, whatever you do, that God is your authority. This is, I think this was chapter 2 from my book, Reset for Parents, I think, maybe chapter 3. Submitting to the right authority. If you are constantly the one who's just telling them, commanding, barking orders at them, when you're gone, they're not going to obey those orders. That's why we want to act as God's representative and have our kids obey us as they submit to God. Not give them choices.
So what should you do if your child has misbehaved but isn't ready to face the music? Simply talk to them like you would if you were talking to an adult. Calmly explain why they're guilty and why they're going to be punished. You can make a business proposal like suggesting that they should either pay a fine from their piggy bank or do the dishes for the next week.
There it is. Choices again. Now, the first part I didn't mind. You talk to them like we don't need to be condescending. We don't need to be jerks to our kids. We shouldn't be. That's sinning. I talk to them. But giving them, so, honey, I told you before that you can't do that, and now you've done that. Remember, God has placed me as your authority, and there are consequences for breaking rules, because that's called sinning. So now here is the consequence, as we've discussed. And by the way, this is something you can make this decision for yourself, but it seems to me, if we're going to use corporal punishment, and we should, because the Bible instructs us to do so, those rules should be set before the wooden spoon gets ripped out of the drawer. In other words, here are the rules of the house. This is what will get you corporal punishment. If you don't explain those up front, I'm not sure it's entirely fair, and it could exacerbate and make them mad.
It could exasperate them, and it could exacerbate the problem.
You need to give them options. Back to the video.
Let them have the right to choose, even when they make mistakes. Now, please keep in mind that emotional abuse is never the right way out.
True.
So instead of making your child stand in the corner for a long time, open up a dialogue and figure out together how their mistake can be fixed.
Okay, so in other words, no punishment at all. No, we want our kids to understand why there's a consequence to sinning. Remember this rule. You do not have naughty children. You might be thinking, oh, yes, I do. No, you don't. You don't have naughty children. You have little sinners. They do not commit naughtiness. They commit sins. Therefore, you need to bring God into the picture. You need to bring Jesus into the scenario. And you need to introduce the consequences for rule breaking, because ultimately then you can point your child to the cross.
If a child refuses to eat lunch but wants their favorite sugary stuff instead.
Let me guess. Give them a choice.
Offer them dessert as a prize for cleaning up their plate.
There it is.
This tip works extremely well if your kid is competitive. In this case, they'll put all their effort into eating their meal as fast as possible to enjoy the sweet...
You better put a neck brace on. You're going to give yourself whiplash. What?
Oh, I have lived with, well, one kid specifically who refuses to eat what's put in front of him. And
Wait. I got it for you. Hold on. Wait a second. Before you say anything, I can help you.
When they won't eat their breakfast. If this is a case, try to set an example. When parents are too busy in the morning
and the child has to have
breakfast by themselves, it's no wonder they might leave most of the food on their plate.
There's your problem.
Doesn't work. Maybe it worked with their kids. My kid refuses.
You're sounding exasperated is what you're sounding right now. Uh-huh. And then what you're also suggesting is these tips could even exacerbate the situation.
Well done, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. If we have learned nothing else here on this parenting segment known as Wretched Radio, we've learned the difference between exasperate and exacerbate. All of these things. Might there be a nugget of common sense in there? Well, there could be. Biblical parenting. We have our children obey us as they submit to the Lord, and then we point them to Jesus without making them nuts. This is Wretched Radio.
I think we could safely say most of television is a vast wasteland of no redeeming value. So now, reason number 442 to visit wretched.org. TV. Lots and lots of TV. See, Wretched has filmed over 2,000 30-minute TV programs with subjects that range from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics, all the way up to the events of today. And it's all free at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org. Each and every last one of our 30-minute TV programs is archived there, and there's the Wretched Library. That's where you'll find Wretched TV episodes that have been hand-sorted for you according to their content. Visit wretched.org. Boatloads of free TV and the Wretched Library, too. Wretched.org. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Good afternoon, Mr. Friel, writes Joshua. As I listen to the Wretched podcast, I've often heard you recommend donating $28 to preborn.org. Indeed, you're correct, Joshua, which will provide an ultrasound for the mother. You go on to say, 80% of the time, the mother then chooses to spare her child's life, which is incredible. Indeed, it is. Joshua writes, I would encourage my fellow wretches who give to preborn to actually give $35 if they have the means, because statistically speaking, with $35 donated, they will save the life of a child. Thank you, my accountant friend, Joshua. He's right. $35, you will save a baby's life. Whatever the amount is that you can give for ultrasounds, would you please consider doing that and giving to Preborn? You can visit preborn.org and save a life for $35. Preborn.org.
Here at Wretched, we receive a lot of email, and to our surprise, some of them aren't angry. In fact, some are downright encouraging. We hear from people who've been saved or rescued out of a bad system, or simply learned that the Bible is a coherent, profound, and practical book. So why do we share this with you? Simple, really. Because without you, we would never receive any emails at all, ever. Without your faithful, consistent, ongoing support, this Wretched ministry simply wouldn't exist. And that's why we want to say thank you to you. Thank you for partnering with us to bring the life-changing and eternity-changing good news to millions of people. So if I may, on behalf of all of us here at Wretched Radio and at Wretched TV, thank you. Thank you very much for your most generous support. And thank you for partnering with us to proclaim amazing grace.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the seed of the woman. Immediately after the fall of man, God promised a Savior who would be the offspring of the woman. Jesus was born of a virgin, a divine Savior born of the seed of woman.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's play.
You be the judge.
Two, three,
answers?
Four.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
I think I nailed that one. This is Wretched Radio. Let's play a round of Am I Being Too Picky? That's right. Am I?
Yes.
Your host, Todd, freakishly tall Friel, being too
yes.
picky.
Yes.
Joey, Tony. You will represent the tens and tens of people who are listening to this year Wretched Radio program to determine, am I just needing to lighten up a little bit here when it comes to proclaiming the gospel correctly? You know, in that context, we're pretty much done, aren't we? Because it just seems intuitive. If we're going to get anything right, it better be the gospel. This will be a little difficult for you because, well, you can't see this because it's radio. But this is a presentation I saw, I think, a number of years ago. But somebody just sent this to me at idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. It's a fellow who is apparently preaching a sermon that is supposed to be the gospel. And then they put it to a video. It's the story of a father and the son. They're walking together. They take the train because dad works as the
switcher, you know, at the switching station.
That's the deal right there. Father works at the switching station right there. And as we will learn, a calamity is about to ensue. Let's begin. Am I being too picky?
As they walked through the woods, the boy was saying to his father, Dad, what will I do when I grow up? What will I get to do? Will I get a cool job like yours? How will I work? He says, I don't know, but I want to change the world. I want to do something great. I want to do something wonderful.
Hold it right there. This is the father and the son walking and talking. Obviously, the father is playing the role of the father. The son is playing the role of the son. Listen again to how the son talks.
As they walked through the woods, the boy was saying to his father, Dad, what will I do when I grow up? What will I get to do? I get a cool job like yours?
Okay, that's misrepresenting Jesus, who is omniscient because he is God.
How will I work? He says, I don't know, but I want to change the world. I want to do something great. I want to do something wonderful. I want to help people. I want to do something that could change the lives of anyone. I just want to be that great. I just want to do something good. And as he walked with his dad was saying, son, you will be great. You will be awesome. You will change the world. No. Your life is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
So you're saying Jesus needs validation here?
Little bit, yes. Okay. He doesn't know what the future holds.
Hey, Todd, every metaphor falls apart at some point. This one is right away.
At the beginning, you know.
So apparently I'm not being too picky at this point. Dad is now at work as the switcher of the train station. He's on the bridge. Trains come and going, and Dad is at work.
And he looks and says, Daddy, the train. Daddy, Daddy, the train's early. Daddy, you got a daddy. Hey, Daddy, 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 the train. Daddy, the train's coming. But the dad was looking at the gears, making sure he had enough oil, making sure there was enough steam to get the bridge back down for the train.
Ah, so now we've got our drama. The father, God, being distracted, doing other things, doesn't realize there's impending doom. Now, that's pretty obviously wrong. But there's something else that's wrong about this. It's setting up what the gospel is. Explaining what's really why are we headed toward disaster? That's assumed. That's one of my quibbles with so many gospel presentations. We assume people understand the basics, and they don't. Our train is on a highway to hell. Yes, I mixed my transportation metaphor on you right in the middle there. But the point is,
railway to hell.
We've got to explain, it'll never catch on, Joey, why? That means explaining God's character and his nature. That means explaining our character and nature. That requires explaining what a just and loving God must do. Otherwise, this makes no sense whatsoever. That, in addition to the representing God as not being omniscient, yeah, that's a bit of a problem. But the train keeps rolling and the bridge isn't switched.
And the dad all of a sudden hears the train coming. He looks and then he says, oh, my son. He looks down and his boy's gone. He's like, oh, my God, where's my son?
Yeah,
What did he want?
Had to bleep out the blasphemy. So God now realizes what's happening, and he can't find Jesus anyplace.
Where's my son? He got up again. He looks back just in time to see his son trying to save the day.
Oh. Isn't that something? This impromptu plan that was predetermined before all of eternity.
All he had to do was pull that lever. He reaches in to pull it, and the boy pulls too far, and he falls in the hole. Now it's on the Father, and God the Father. Did you hear me? God the Father has to make a choice. It's his now. Do I save my son, or do I save the world?
All right, the kid falls into the hole. So now if he pulls the lever to bring the bridge down, the train can cross, people will live, but his son dies. Or do I let the people perish so my son can live? It is not picking a nit to say that's horrific. First of all, it was the Father's plan. That's why we can't forget the Trinity in salvation. Yes, Jesus accomplished the work, but it was the Father's idea. And he sent his son, who obediently said, I will go. This isn't even close to that. This is a dithering, not omniscient, responding God who apparently now needs to come up with some sort of... Both of the alternatives, bad, bad, bad.
And they didn't even know. They never would know. They didn't even know the train goes by. It's fine. Everything's cool. The bridge is down, just like always. It's always going to be down.
All right, so God sends, lets his son die. He pulls the switch. Boy dies. The kids cross. And they don't even know what God has done for them.
And there was a girl in the bathroom on the train, liquefying her heroin to shoot up one more time. He died for her. But in one moment, are you listening? In one moment, as the Bible says, everybody gets a chance. In one moment, where, to see the look of the Father when he knows what he, when you realize what he did for you, when you realize the sacrifice, when you realize he let his son die so that you can live, when you realize what he did, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you're at in this life, no matter what you're a part of, you gotta stop. You gotta stop! Even if it's for 1 second and think, my God, he did it for me!
Yay. First of all, we didn't get that address where it says that we all get a chance at that. Everybody is being preached at constantly by creation. Everybody has a conscience bearing witness. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to hear about the sacrifice of the Son. Furthermore, yes, we are to stop sinning, but it's also to believe in the Father. This is a mess.
There had to be a moment in those 3 days when Jesus died on a Friday and rose again on a Sunday. There had to be this moment. Go ahead, look at the screen. When it was just God and his baby and his son.
And he's feeling really, really terrible. Now, that's tricky territory, because we see in Isaiah 53, it pleased his God, pleased God to crush his son. That doesn't mean it was yippy skippy. Doesn't mean it was a joyous thing, but it was his pleasure, because it was the most amazing thing ever. And so that was pleasing to God in that sense. And did he cry thinking about, oh, my boy, what'll I do? Well, first of all, the ontological nature of God doesn't change, even though Jesus died as fully God, fully man, did not change the ontological nature of God. Jesus was never a baby who actually grew up. And the relationship between Father and Son was never broken, was, is, always will be the same. Now, there's more to this, but I think we get the point. Gentlemen, I would now like for you to render your verdict.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
Well, Am I being too picky, Joey? Go.
Absolutely, because couldn't you hear the passion in his voice? Because he kept yelling, and then he'd get really soft, and then he'd yell some more.
Yeah, I know that made for a lot of work on my end here. But that is yes. Oh, okay, right. It was very emotive. Tony, am I being too nitpicky when it comes to presenting the gospel?
Can't believe I'm saying this. No.
That's right.
You couldn't be too nitpicky on that piece of dreck.
Sorry.
Might somebody get saved from it? I suppose so, but then you'd have to unwind a lot of bad stuff.
Yes, if they were unconscious while it was happening.
Don't assume that anybody knows nothing about anything. You must be accurate. You must be thorough. Otherwise, you are not presenting the gospel rightly. This is Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. The Apostle Peter wrote a second epistle to clarify and defend the Christian message. He asserts the authority of Scripture, warns against false teachers, and reminds us that the end is coming. But God is patient, allowing all of his people to come to repentance. If you want a clear contrast between true and false Christianity, look to 2 Peter. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do not sin. Just telling you, do not sin. This is Wretched Radio. I'm about to say something, and your immediate inclination is going to be to sin against me. Don't do it. Here we go. In an effort to keep me from going completely crazy, did you pass or fail the admonition? In an effort to keep me from going completely crazy, would like to share something with you that we're going to listen to together, because I'm trying to figure something out and I don't have it worked out. Now, that's typically not the way we do things here at Wretched Radio. Typically, we'd like to work things out, do some studying, research, and then present. I don't have this figured out. In fact, I'm not sure that this is figure out a bull. So perhaps you could help me and keep me from going just bonkers on an issue. I want to share with you two courtroom dramas. Here's the first one. A young lady is guilty of getting a bunch of parking tickets that she hasn't paid. And the judge shows mercy. Please listen to this encounter, because then we're going to listen to another encounter where the judge does not show mercy. And you're going to say, well, wait, then where can you show mercy? See, one of them feels right. The other one is like, no, that's not right. You shouldn't have held the law like. So where do we find this balance? And I think that this is actually has some practical implication for us as we consider our culture, our justice system, rules at home. Do you have a child who's they missed their nap and they're just whining all the afternoon long? You kind of have some leniency because they missed their nap circumstances. Another parent could go, doesn't matter about the circumstances. That child needs to knock it off right now. Okay, well, yes, that's true. So where do we weigh circumstances with justice, mingling mercy with justice? This is court case number one. Fascinating stuff.
All right. The one on 11-1. Yeah, the one on 11-1, I went to Social Security because they had cut my check. Because my son was recently killed last year. So they cut my check because he had owed money.
Who?
My son was killed March of last year. Right. So I was his rep payee. So they took my money because he had owed money. So I had to go to Social Security to fix that matter. When I came out, I had a ticket. Then another time on the 5th, the parking meter wasn't working. I have the picture for that. On 1-4, I was at court because my landlord was trying to evict me. So I was at eviction court. Come out, I got a ticket. Mind you, he won possession of the apartment, so I had to move. So I got a ticket, he won possession of the apartment. Then I get another one because I tried to go to the legal services to try to get help to fix this. I go get some change out of Dunkin' Donuts, come out, I got a $100 ticket.
What was
it's
the
like I can't win.
What was the situation with the mix up in Social Security with your son?
My son was killed last year, March of last year. They said that he owed $75 of overpayment from May of 2016. Mind you, he was already deceased at that time. So what they did was they stopped my whole check until I went in there to fix the problem. So when I came out, right. I had a parking ticket.
All right.
I've had a tough year already. I'm on SSDI. I don't have $400 to give you.
What would you do? What would you do? She broke the law. Simple as that. She broke the law. Would the judge be wrong to say, nice story, pay your fine? I guess that's certainly an option. But you ask yourself the question, why does that feel wrong? Why does that just feel wrong? Hold on. The circumstances, they just keep getting worse and worse. What would you do?
On top of whatever else, I really do. I just had to come up with money for a new apartment. I'm still paying Russell and Boyd for my son's funeral. Like, I don't know where this money's supposed to come from. I wish I would have got my brother that night, and he wouldn't have killed my son.
Hold on.
That's why my son's gone.
Did you catch that? Her brother is the one who murdered her son.
I'm just really having a tough time, Your Honor.
I think we can all express our sympathy to you and understand the trauma that you have experienced. I'm going to take all of the circumstances that you just have explained to me into consideration and see if I can balance the equities to protect the interests of the city and take into consideration, you know, the horrific story that you just told us relative to your son. I don't think anyone in their lifetime would ever want to experience that, so.
Do you catch the tension? Representing the interest of the state, and yet he's not supposed to be overly sympathetic to the interests of the state. That would make him unbiased, and justice is supposed to be blind. He wants to take into consideration. So we could ask at this point, what things should be considered? Because she's having a bad season of life. How bad does it need to be to cancel out justice? Do you feel the tension in this? And I'm certain the Bible can help us with this. I just haven't figured it out yet. Here's what the judge did.
It's the worst feeling in the world. I feel so empty, Lord.
I'm going to reduce this to $50. How much time do you need to pay it?
I have it on me now.
All right. That's not going to leave you without any money, is it?
I'll leave it with $5. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm not going to leave you with $5. I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to dismiss everything.
Thank you.
All right. With our best wishes and hope that things turn around good for you.
That felt right, didn't it? That seemed to be the kind thing to do. I think one of the things that can help us through this thought is keeping realms of authority, defining some lines, government laws, moral laws, and sometimes they overlap. Some people would say all law is moral law. I understand that. Not sure that that's quite the force of a government law that doesn't have a particular commandment in mind. Nevertheless, it just seemed that we can consider certain things that might mitigate the consequence for somebody's behavior. Now, you also think about, well, did we ever see justice and mercy mingling? Yes, at the cross, but that fine was paid. That fine was paid by Jesus. Somebody had to pay the fine for our sin. That was Jesus. So this woman is just being let off scot-free. So what would you do? Now, there was another court case down in Texas, and a young woman was being abused by her husband, held at knife point at times. He was going to trial for his criminal behavior, and the judge was really mad about what? The fact that the wife didn't show up to testify against her husband. And so she ordered the woman into court, said, "What's your excuse?" The woman said, "Been really depressed. It's been really, really hard. I've been scared. I've got a one-year-old child that I'm trying to raise. I don't have any money. I'm living in my parents' basement. And so I'm sorry." And the judge said, 3 days in the clink. Now, the Supreme Court of, did I say Texas? It was Florida. If I said Texas, I meant Florida. The Supreme Court in Florida actually brought that woman into Supreme Court and basically undressed her. What you did was shameful. It showed that you had too much deference toward the state. It demonstrated that you weren't being a judge that was mindful of any other considerations. Therefore, you're done. And shame on you. Now, what was the difference? Okay, one upheld the law and didn't take in mind any considerations and was reprimanded for actually just sentencing the person and executing justice. The other woman that we just heard, it was completely dismissed. It was let go because of circumstances. So that's why, if you could help me not go crazy biblically, remember Jesus said about the Sabbath laws, Mark chapter 2, Pharisees are all uptight. You don't get it. The Sabbath was made for man. In other words, this law was made to serve man. And if there are instances where the law does not serve man, then it doesn't need to be adhered to. So that's one hint that this can happen, where we can look at circumstances and go, I know what the law says, but recognizing full well that can be abused very, very quickly, and there can be times when it's extremely subjective. Now, you want to chew on that? Let me know. idea@wretched.org. And you could apply this to the conversation on immigration if you really want to make it zesty. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you much for joining us today. We always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. May I share one of the emails we have received from our fellow wretches? This came from Ricky. "Wretched, I just wanted to thank you for your book, Stressed Out. I recently had a brain surgery, and your book helped prepare and calm me a lot, and I am very comfortable for my next surgery in 2 weeks. Just had to thank you. Go serve your king, Ricky." Honestly, emails like that make our day. They really do. And we receive quite a few of them, where a resource or a video or a piece of a radio show has helped someone through a rough patch. And everything we have to offer is because of our monthly gospel partners, the folks who consistently, every month, keep Wretched on the radio, the TV, the internet. If you are able and so inclined, would you join us and become a monthly gospel partner? Details are at wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Life in the nation of Georgia is so hard.
How hard is it?
Apparently as hard as it is to deliver a line. It's so hard that when Paul and Cindy Marty were there visiting their Tomorrow Clubs in the nation of Georgia, I don't even know that I could find it on a map. They stayed in some Christians' homes. They could see their breath inside of the house. Why? Because life is hard in Georgia and Moldova and Romania and Ukraine. And what makes it doubly hard, there's no gospel hope there. Tomorrow Clubs is changing that. Paul and Cindy Marty leading an amazingly efficient ministry with thousands of volunteers, which is why $30 a month makes 30 disciples. Would you like to participate in that sort of gospel effort? You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. $30, 30 disciples, tomorrowclubs.org.
Oh, the kids these days with their electronic devices doing the Angry Birds and such. The adults these days with the yard work and paying the taxes and such. Don't you just wish you could do something that both parents and kids would actually enjoy?
find a happy medium and visit the Wretched website. Hundreds of hours of TV, thousands of hours of radio, all centered around biblical teaching. And our library? Hand-selected TV shows ranging from apologetics to parenting. You choose by topic. Now, we can't promise that your family will be singing Kumbaya around the campfire. And really, do you want to? But we do guarantee that you'll get solid biblical teaching and never have to hear about birds with anger issues ever again. So gather the family and visit the home of all things wretched, wretched.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Books of the Bible. Zephaniah begins with a shocking prophecy that God will sweep away everything from the face of the earth. But in the midst of judgment, God offers hope of salvation. Zephaniah gives us a picture of God's terrible wrath and reminds us of the wrath Jesus took upon himself for our sake. Flee to the Savior and be saved. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Thank you for helping me out with my conundrum. Send it to idea@wretched.org. If you could do that by Friday so we could discuss it here on Wretched Radio, I would be muy grateful. That's German for a lot grateful. idea@wretched.org. idea@wretched.org. I'm kidding. It was French. Everybody knows that. I don't know that we can find a perfect line of justice and mercy mingling that helps us walk through parenting cases that we need to act as judge and juror on, or courtroom cases, or societal issues and laws like the issue of immigration. That's one of the reasons I want to get this figured out. Can we ever have a law as Christians and say, yes, but that law in this instance, for that particular person or persons, is not a good law, therefore we do not need to execute justice on that law? Can we do that? Do we have biblical permission for that? I believe there are times that we can. I would refer you back to Mark chapter 2 when Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man. Laws are supposed to help us. They're supposed to be good for us. And when a law, because of circumstances, isn't good, then you don't adhere to that law. Now, I don't think that's liberal. I don't think that's squishy. I think it's brilliant because the scenarios, the context, you've got a million moving variables in anybody's life at any given moment. And the principle that I think is in the Bible is that there can be mercy without justice, even though a crime has been committed. Now, Tony is folding his arms right now, not happy about the entire concept.
I'm not.
All right, fine. All right. You're just going to huff and puff and blow that microphone down. All right, let me tell you. I'm sorry for that. Get your, what is it, the aerator, the ventilator? That one, right
inhalers.
There. All right, let me share with you another court case. This is Judge Frank Caprio. I just found these very compelling. And Tony, I want you to answer for me when this is done. Would you have made the same decision as the judge? Would you, if you will, grant leniency, overlook this fellow's crime because of circumstances?
Is there anything you want to tell me about this, sir?
By the way, the guy's in Pennsylvania. If you're not familiar with Judge Caprio, he's got videos that are on the internet that are wildly popular because people see this. And now I will grant you, they say things like, this is the way a judge ought to be. Well, a judge shouldn't ought to be always dismissing every case because of circumstances, which brings us back to my point. When can we overlook a crime because of circumstances?
Is there anything you want to tell me about this, sir?
I'd like to plead guilty with an explanation, sir.
All right. So now we know you were there.
Right.
All right.
All right. If you're on.
Can I just point out something else that this judge is doing that is helpful? He's treating these people with respect. Now that's so big when it comes to helping somebody or dealing with somebody who is in a sin. If you're counseling somebody, they've committed a crime against God, they've sinned, and you're trying to help them out. Respect should be a part of it. Love for them should be a part of it. Compassion for them should be a part of it. Where do I get that? Jesus, he looked upon the crowds and he had compassion. He looked at the rich young ruler. He had love for the young man who was very self-righteous, sitting on his high horse, both literally and figuratively. Jesus saw that they were hungry, and he felt for them. At the funeral of Lazarus, he wept, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how many times?" He had compassion for people. Paul did too. "I came to you like a mother. This grieves me." And they knew it. If you want to help somebody affect change in their life, you want to help that? Be compassionate. Be loving. Let that person know you are for them. And R-E-S-P-E-C-T them. Just like this judge.
Anna has ever been to the VA hospital, which I do several times a week. The parking is atrocious at best. I have seen many others parked there on the sidewalk where I got the ticket with no consequences and figured the police were giving veterans a break. I know I parked illegally, and that doesn't make it right. First, I feel that for other veterans and myself, the fine is too hefty for the first-time offense in that area. I feel that signs should be posted with the amount of the fine, which will hopefully deter people and veterans from parking there. I would like to thank Your Honor and the court for any leniency that may be administrated to my fellow veterans and myself on matters like this.
Well, what would you do?
All right, sir. So you went to the Veterans Hospital for treatment of something, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you were in the military. What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Army, sir.
Okay. And when was this?
I'm a Vietnam veteran.
So you were in Vietnam? You served in Vietnam?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. How long were you there?
A little over a year, sir.
Okay.
Didn't have to ask those questions.
In all fairness, I've had other instances where veterans went to the VA for treatment, and many of them, treatment was something that had to be done quickly, and they were unable to find parking spaces as well. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, but there's no other place for them to park except on Regent Avenue. And this is a case of me balancing the equities.
There it is
so
again.
I'm trying to balance, you know, the enforcement policy of the city of Providence against the parking situation at not only any establishment, but the Veterans Hospital, which serves people who have served this country very honorably, whether it's in combat or whether it's in active duty in a foreign country or whether it's here. It makes no difference. They have sacrificed a period of time of their life to serve this country. In your case, you served in Vietnam. I'm well aware of Vietnam, I think, as we all are. And I think we owe a particular debt of gratitude, not only to all the veterans who served elsewhere, but particularly Vietnam. So, and now you need some medical treatment. You go for medical treatment that the government is providing, and they give you a $100 parking ticket. So, in disposing of this case, what I'm going to say to you, sir, is thank you for your service, and the matter is dismissed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I want to thank you for years of service to the community.
So, did the judge make the right decision? Tony, what would you have done, Judge Verkanis?
See, thank heavens I'm not the judge. I don't mind a judge or even a cop on the beat showing leniency now and again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the laws they're asked to enforce are written because the city needs money or the state wants cash, and this is an easy way to get it. I get
that. All right, now let me just argue back the way you argue with me usually.
Go
all
on.
Right? But laws are laws, and if they want to change the laws and make the laws better, it needs to go through legislature. There's processes for it. In the meantime, that's the
exactly.
law. She should be punished and pay the fine, or he should go to jail or whatever.
And that is the vocation of the judge and the police. However, they do have certain leniency within that they can use. So do I mind that they use it? No. The trouble I have is we tend to swing all the way over and go, oh, no big deal. You guys just go out there and don't do that again.
I think you're getting soft on us. Now, I do happen to have the aforementioned case in Texas. The woman who was brought in for contempt of court because her husband abusing her at knife point he was gone for a year. They finally haul him into jail. He loses his job. She doesn't have any money. She's trying to find an apartment. She's broke. She's scared. She's trying to move on with her life. So she's explaining to the judge who has brought her in for contempt of court why she didn't show up. And this is how that case was decided.
He went to jail for 2 weeks. He lost his job. He lost everything. And I didn't, I'm like homeless now. I'm living at my parents' house. Everything has been shut off. I just sell everything I own. Like, I'm just not in a, I'm not in a good place right now.
So I'm sorry about that. The order did not do anything for you. I hereby find you in contempt of court. I sentence you to 3 days in the county jail. Turn around.
Judge, I'll do anything. Please, please.
You should have showed up and... You should have showed up.
I have a one-year-old son, and I'm trying to take care of him by myself. But I'm begging you, please, please don't. Please, please.
I've already issued my order.
Order issued, case closed. Off to jail for 3 days. Now, I suspect something about that made you go, yeah. Now, maybe an option would have been, I get this, kind of a middle ground sort of affair. Like, could she have just said, community sir, you're going to have to do 8 hours of community service someplace. Okay, option.
Or set the sentence and state it.
Or something like, fine, you've done wrong.
That was brutal.
Okay, but she was upholding the law.
She was.
The letter. Yep. And my contention is, moral issues, crimes that are hurting somebody's person, taking away from them, the rationale and justification for that, there is none. They can have circumstances. All it did was just allow the sinful behavior to come out. But in man-made laws that are supposed to be for human thriving, when they do not accomplish that end, I believe, and biblically, Mark 2, that we can say there are times when mercy overrules justice. Idea at wretched.org. Until next time, go serve your king.